Okay, who won the ball game last night? Was it the Giants or the Washington football team?
Redskins.
Huh? Oh, okay, the Redskins. Yeah, neither one. All right, good, good, good. Well, I stayed up and watched a little bit of it. I can't watch these games when they Sunday night. They come on at 8:30 and go until 12:30, and people that have jobs and lives usually can't watch all that. All right, good morning. It's Tony Beam. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Tony and Austin. This is my co-host over here, Austin Barker.
Hi, everybody.
Hi there. Beard's shaping up pretty good. Starting to look very shapely. It's obvious you've been trimming on it. You don't have the outdoor bare backwoods look to it. It's more professional, very coiffed.
It's the end of October. Yeah. I've never heard the word coiffed before. But
yeah? You never have heard that word before?
Is it C-O-I-F-E?
Yes, that's the way I believe it's spelled.
I think I've read that word, and I always thought it was coiffe. No, I'm just kidding about that. But
no, that's coffee.
I've never heard it before.
That's the way French coffee. Spell coffee. So, okay. Speaking of which, hang on just a minute, will you?
He's doing that just to taunt me.
No, I did it because I need it. I don't often need a cup of coffee like I need one today.
Well, thank you. So. I didn't realize that you were saying that I could do this without coffee, that I don't need it. I mean, the implication.
I have no idea your coffee intake or your addiction to it or lack thereof. We've never really talked about coffee. Are you a coffee guy?
Isn't there a scripture about that?
What, coffee?
Yeah.
Hebrews, yeah. It talks about that. Hebrews. Okay. Enough of that aspect. I wanted to start out today. Yesterday I talked a lot about the ERLC and stuff that they're doing for life. And I got really carried away about it because, I mean, Stand for Life is one of the most exciting programs that I've heard in a long time because the bringing together of pro-life groups from across the country and the plans that I know that we can't talk about yet but are being laid for Roe 50. And really, we're hoping that Roe 50 will cease to be anything other than a full all-out celebration of the fact that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. And we do have that opportunity coming up. Arguments at the Supreme Court on a bill from Mississippi are going to be made this fall, going into the winter. Well, it'll be in the fall. And then in the spring, they'll debate and come up with a decision, and we'll hear about it next summer. Probably be the last one they release. That's the way that usually goes. They release all the milquetoast, you know, your mama can't take your tomatoes out of your grandmother's garden stuff. And then they, at the end of the summer, okay, no more abortion. So
you know there was a Supreme Court case about tomatoes.
Yes, I do know that.
Okay, good.
Actually, yeah, I that's why I picked tomatoes.
Okay. But
I didn't really want to go all into it.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I thought you would be. So in light of some of the good things that are happening in the United States about abortion, I thought we'd talk a little bit about what's happening in abortion around the world, particularly in Mexico. Yesterday, Dr. Moeller, he does this podcast called The Briefing. He's the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, which is one of the six Southern Baptist seminaries that are paid for by the cooperative program. So he talked about this Supreme Court decision in Mexico that came down earlier, and we really haven't talked about it. Maybe you and Corey talked about it. It kind of happened while I was away. It was kind of toward the end of last week, and we didn't really have time to get into it. But what the Supreme Court in Mexico did was decriminalize abortion. In other words, it's no longer a crime. Since the beginning of Mexico, it's been a crime to kill a baby in the womb. And without a lot of clamor, without people running and shouting for the Mexican Supreme Court to change the law, except for progressives, of course, who have abortion as a sacrament for their progressive ideology, Mexico really didn't need to have a change in the law on abortion. Mexico is the vast majority Catholic. It is vast majority conservative. A lot of people don't realize that or think about it, but Mexico is the people in Mexico are, for the most part, conservative and have been raised in a traditional conservative way in Catholic households. And that would describe a lot of Mexico. So, you know, what you've got in Mexico is the same thing essentially you have here, which is the contrast between a group of progressive elites who want the sacrament of abortion to take place, that is, to be normalized and to be pushed, celebrated at any point in gestation from conception all the way to the birth canal, and maybe even a little bit outside the birth canal. They're perfectly happy with that. Peter Singer, in fact, Peter Singer is one of the philosophers in this country that makes personhood a problem, because he attributes personhood to all sentient, self-aware beings. So that means the great apes, that means dolphins, that means chimpanzees, that means orangutans, that means a lot of members of the animal kingdom, under Singer's definition of personhood, are persons because they're sentient and self-aware. So when you we don't have time to get into, I don't want to get into the whole personhood question as to whether personhood is the right approach to ban abortion, or we need a different route to get there because of the philosophical destruction of the concept of personhood that's already taken place in America. But let's just say that in Mexico, just because the Supreme Court says it's now not criminal to perform an abortion, it doesn't mean that abortions are going to start being performed tomorrow, that Planned Parenthood are going to be down there opening up abortion clinics left and right. And the reason is because the vast majority of medical doctors in Mexico will not perform abortions. In places, the few places where abortion has been made legal, in a couple of states, Mexico has roughly states the way we do, territories that have local government. And in those states that have allowed abortion, they've got an overwhelming response of doctors and medical professionals who say, well, this may be legal, but we're not going to do it because it goes against our conscience. Some, it goes against their conscience. Some, it goes against their deeply held religious beliefs. And by the way, here in the United States, most Americans favor some restriction on abortion. In other words, if you go down the street and you ask 10 people, should there be restrictions on abortion, probably 7 or 8 of them are going to say yes. Now, they may differ in what they think those restrictions should be, but if you go and ask a room full of progressives, they'll say no restrictions whatsoever on abortion. Abortion is a woman's right, and if she doesn't have fully the ability to exercise that right, then she's being oppressed, and it has to stop. So, but most Americans are not in tune with that. So the question is, that was posed by the New York Times this week, the print edition of the Times. I get the digital edition. Sometimes some of the print stuff, they actually do it separately so that you know, it's a marketing tool. Like if you subscribe to the digital New York Times, then the print New York Times maybe have stories that the digital doesn't. So they want, what they want is for you to get the actual paper and the digital version. So they're not mirrors of each other necessarily. But anyway, the print version of the New York Times had a story this week. Said, what's going to happen with these doctors? Are they going to perform abortions? The answer is that most will not. And the New York Times opinion about this is that, well, these doctors are on the wrong side of history and they've got to either be re-educated or forced. Now, that's an interesting thought, because in Mexico, back in 2018, the Mexican legislature passed a law that says that medical professionals cannot be required or forced to violate their conscience when it comes to medical procedures. And guess what? That law has been challenged and will be in front of the Mexican Supreme Court next week. So let me just ask you, what do you think is going to happen with a bunch of justices who have just ruled for no other reason than there were a few states in Mexico that were deciding to perform abortions, even though they couldn't find doctors to do it? What? How do you think the Supreme Court of Mexico steps in and says, "Oh no, 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 abortion is now decriminalized. We're leading the way as a Latin American country. In fact, Mexico became last week the most populous Latin American country to allow abortion. Most Latin American countries don't allow abortion for the reason Mexico hasn't allowed it, and it's because they're majority Catholic." We're talking about abortion in Mexico. Here's just a quick rehash before we kind of wrap this up. But Mexican Supreme Court last week ruled that abortion is to be decriminalized. Problem is, for the New York Times anyway, is that it's going to take a long time for abortions to become widespread in Mexico because the people don't want it. The doctors won't perform it. And the Mexico Supreme Court, even the New York Times agrees about this, is out of sync with the rest of the population in the country. Robert Castro, who's a health researcher at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, says a lot of medical workers in Mexico were trained with traditional values in the medical profession. In other words, they're trained to see abortion as the taking of a human life, something they're sworn not to do. So he says the vast majority of doctors will not be performing abortions anytime soon, unless the Mexico Supreme Court overturns this 2018 law in Mexico that protects the rights of conscience of doctors and other medical professionals. And then there can be a movement to force doctors to perform abortions. That question is happening in this country. I mean, we have that happening now. We're still sort of out to lunch on whether or not people of conscience are going to be able to disagree with abortion, prescribing abortion pills. Chemical abortion is on the rise. That's one of the newest things that's happening in the abortion industry. And the reason is because, quite frankly, crisis pregnancy centers have been so effective at intervening with women who are pregnant and they begin to consider an abortion, then they wander in or are directed into a crisis pregnancy center and they decide to keep their baby. A lot of them come to know Christ as Savior. And so Planned Parenthood just can't have that. So chemical abortions make it much easier simply because there's less time for pro-life groups to intervene if you get chemical abortions rolling. And during COVID and telemedicine, chemical abortions were kind of the thing. And telemedicine is the big thing. If you haven't seen the commercials, one of the biggest places that telemedicine has already taken hold is in, how shall I word this, areas where men have difficulty in relationships, and you can go online in privacy, talk to a doctor, and they can actually send you a prescription for something to help with that problem. And it comes anonymous, sort of clandestine manner, so that your neighbors don't necessarily know that you have this problem. So this telemedicine is beginning to explode, and COVID has pushed it along, and Planned Parenthood is taking advantage of that because it narrows the gap between when a woman finds out she's pregnant and when she can receive attention from somebody who's going to encourage her to kill her baby instead of encouraging her to let her baby live and then help them through the process after the baby's born. So the New York Times says, as we said, they said, yeah, it's true. Most people in Mexico don't want it. Most medical professionals are not going to be running to perform those abortions. But the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Mexico, Justice Zaldivar, said in the New York Times, and this is a quote. So I want you to pick up not only on the life issue, but how the woke language of the West is dribbling down into Mexico. I mean, it's almost like we've got an overflow of woke insanity, and it's kind of running over the border going into Mexico. You know, it's people that are concerned about illegal immigration. Let me give you some encouraging news. The woke approach and philosophy of the West, once it fully infiltrates Mexico, it will destroy that country. And there's not going to be anybody to come here. Okay, they're gonna. I mean, it's gonna eventually destroy us too. But it actually, the transition in other countries may be faster because other countries don't have the constitution that we have that actually provides some sort of last rampart protections against the woke ideology. So if Mexico becomes woke, it'll just destroy the country. And it sounds like they're well on their way. If you listen to Chief Justice Zaldivar, he said he saw the ruling as the first step toward a more fundamental transformation in Mexican society. Quote, now begins a new path of freedom, of clarity, of dignity, and respect for all pregnant people, but above all, for women. Today is one more step in the historic fight for their equality, for their dignity, and for the full exercise of their rights. So we've got two groups down in Mexico that should be celebrating, according to Zaldivar, and that's pregnant people and women. And he doesn't necessarily believe those two are the same thing. So this is the pure biological, physiological, theological insanity of the left that makes absolutely no sense, which is now beginning to be picked up by elites in Mexico. So I've run my trap here for a while.
That's fine. People need to hear what you're having to say.
Well, I really did a lot of thinking about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, did some thinking, drinking, because I was drinking Mexico's, my Coke Zero while I was thinking about this.
Mexico's not the only one. I mean, this is an issue in South America, too, where they're just trying to liberalize their politics around abortion. And it's regrettable. I mean, because I'm just thinking about what you're saying about how, you know, dominant majority Catholic countries.
Yeah.
And how the Catholic Church, gratefully, has been a bulwark against abortion, has been a bastion of support for the dignity of humanity and life.
Right. And they still are.
They are, but that line is wavering in some places.
Yeah.
And I mean, and even, like, I'm just reading a story. I got this from the Colson Center, from one of the John Stone Street's Breakpoints, but there's a Catholic church up in Charlotte. I don't know if you heard about this last week, that lost their case at the district level. They fired a teacher for marrying another guy, a male teacher for marrying another guy.
Yeah, I did hear about this. Glad you're talking about it.
And the judge said, the ruling came down. The reason that the Catholic school lost the case is, and I'm not making this up, they're not Catholic enough. Because listen to this, they actually instructed teachers of secular subjects at this Catholic high school. They mm-hmm. instructed them not to teach Catholic doctrine. Like, Catholic doctrine is to be taught by these trained religious instructors over here, and then you're a teacher of secular information, so you don't teach that stuff. And
yeah,
so,
interesting.
You don't get a religious exemption. You know, generally speaking, Christian educators, they infuse their Christianity into whatever content area that they're teaching. But not here at this Catholic school. Apparently, they wanted to, you know, be more of a public-facing institution, and so they wanted to incorporate people. They don't even ask their teachers if they're Catholic.
Right.
Okay? They don't require subscription to Catholic Orthodox doctrine. And so I'm not surprised they lost.
No.
They deserve to lose on that account.
That's true. That's a good point. Because if you're not going to be, if your argument is, we have to follow our Catholic teaching, and they don't even follow it as a principle in the school, and or consider it to be important enough to be inculcated into the content of the classroom that they're teaching, then absolutely, that's
like
not...
Like, I haven't heard of this stuff since the 1980s. It seemed like we learned our lesson back in the 1980s that all truth is God's truth. Thank you, Francis Schaeffer. Maybe I'm sure that existed before, because the classical heritage of Christian thought is that all truth is God's truth. Nancy Percy, total truth, all that stuff. Yeah.
Right.
But I'm just saying that it really, really became clear to us that there is no such thing as a secular sacred divide.
Yeah.
That was kind of the at least in my view, that was the 70s and 80s when we really got a handle on
that. Well, the reason North Greenville University has an exemption right now from Title IX requirements that would force us to violate our conscience is because we can demonstrate and have demonstrated that we are a historical evangelical school, that our policies are designed to inculcate a worldview that's fueled by our religious beliefs.
At every
and
level
so,
of
at
employment.
Every level.
I mean,
right.
From the janitor to the president.
Yeah, and from math to, you know, and you people used to laugh about that because, well, math doesn't have a worldview. Think again. When now you have people in Seattle, Washington, California telling students that showing your work in long division is a racist statement. And so math is actually now woke. So there is a worldview attached to the teaching of math, which...
Well, because it's a Christian I'm going to say this word, epistemology.
Yeah,
it's like, how do we know stuff?
Right.
Well, we know it because God has given it to us. There's a givenness to creation. There's a givenness to math. There's a givenness to the natural order. And so if you think that you can just superimpose some subjective meaning onto a discipline that belongs to God, that he's given us, well, you're nope. You know, can't fight gravity.
I taught epistemology as part of my Christian worldview class. It was, you know, you could teach a whole class on epistemology, but mine was just a section. But I basically told the students, I said, if you're going to have a Christian worldview, you have to understand the epistemology. You have to understand the meaning of the words that we're using and how they're used and why Christianity makes sense. How do we know this stuff is true? Well, there are standards of how we know what we know. It's just that they're being trashed, thrown out. And that started with postmodernism. And we're so far from postmodernism now. I mean, you know, what was postmodern back in 2002, it looks like it's child's play.
Looks like Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, compared to where we are now with absolute truth, which absolutely doesn't exist anywhere. It's been totally thrown out. All right, Jim wants to talk about abortion. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first question is, where are the callers today?
Well, here you're
one of them. This is a fantastic subject we need to talk about, and why aren't they calling in and talking about it?
Well, you always ask that, Jim, and I don't ever have an answer for you. I mean, I, you know.
Well, then I'm talking to the listeners. I almost can't get anything done in the morning because I enjoy this program so much. I just got to sit and listen. I'm late to work.
Well, that's what happens. Let me just answer the first question. That's what a lot of people are doing. They're just sitting and listening, and they don't want to pick up the phone and call because they're enjoying the content and don't necessarily feel like they have to step into it. So, but the fact
knowing they have the right to call you because I do, I wish they would call and talk about it.
Yeah.
The second question is relation to abortion. Those of us that don't want to see abortion need to stop using that word. Abortion simply means we're stopping the process. We need to find a word that's acceptable to people who are doing the abortion because we need to be sensitive to them. They don't understand they're taking the life of a child. They're just stopping the process. We need to find a word that we can use. Do you understand what I'm saying? That it describes the child's life as being taken.
Yeah.
There's a word for that. It's called infanticide.
It's not right to say they're murdering their child. They're not murdering them. It is, but we want to be sensitive to their feelings to understand they're taking the life of a child. When that child is inside of the woman, she loses her rights to her body. As I've said before, Tony, if you're in a car, you can do whatever you want. But when I step into the car, you lose all the rights. It's the same thing with her body. We need to help them to understand that child has right to life.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate those thoughts. I think in one way is better to talk about it is that a woman doesn't lose her rights over her body when she becomes pregnant. It's just that there's a baby, there's a third person, there's a living being inside of her that now possess the same rights that she does. So what we should say is it's not that she doesn't have rights over her body, but that she can't usurp the life of the baby by asserting her rights over the baby's body. That's actually closer to the actual argument that we're talking about here. Because once you acknowledge that pregnancy is simply a part of a woman's body or a woman's right, you know, then you're losing the main argument of the pro-life community, which is that no, there's a third person here, and that person from the moment of conception has rights that should be protected just like the mother's.
All the woman's agency and choice comes into the fact of the behaviors that lead to the pregnancy. You can make your choices. Good. You can't make you can't decide the consequences of those choices. That is as true as a third grade T-ball player as it is of a woman in a pregnancy.
Right.
Okay? That's a life principle, folks. All right, is that you can make your choices, but you can't decide what happens after you've made that choice.
Pregnancy is caused by an action that you've got a lot of choices. You can not engage in that action. You can
and if you disagree with what Tony just said, if you disagree with the fact that you can choose not to engage in behaviors that lead to pregnancy, you really need to have your head examined. Okay?
Yeah. I mean obviously it's true that you can make that. Now, the progressives would say you should never be forced to make that decision. Well, we have to make decisions every day that come with consequences that affect us morally, physically, and every other way. Plus, we live in the world of the pill. So if you want to have sex and have it often and without consequences, you can take birth control pills, and then you don't have to think about abortion because you can prevent yourself from becoming pregnant. Now, I'm not advocating for that. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do. I'm saying that that's a choice that comes along with choosing not to have sex. So it's not even a question of whether you have to choose not to have sex. It's just a question of whether you're going to have unprotected sex and use abortion as birth control, which is what a lot of women do.
That's right. And even going one step further back behind that and just saying that God has set up the rules of the world. I come back to this and come back to this. One of the rules of the world is that sex leads to pregnancy.
Right.
Okay. And so even if you're on the pill, even if, you know, every contraceptive method has...
Can fail.
That's right. And so if after that you said, well, I did my best and I still got pregnant. Well, that's because God has set up the world where pregnancy leads to, or sex leads to pregnancy.
Right.
And you can not like that all you want. You can push back against that, but as Jesus said to Apostle Paul, it's very hard for you to kick against those pricks, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with natural law as it is with natural physical laws of the universe. There's a natural moral law that can't be violated.
That's exactly it.
The law of gravity is you can push back on it, but you can't push back on it once you're falling. Unless you have a parachute.
Yeah, you just can't superimpose your will over given law.
Right.
Like, God has set up the world, and if you want to jump out of a building and say that I want to go up, there's no conceivable way that that's going to happen. You can't defy that. And so if you want to say, I want to have all the sex that I want, and I don't want to get pregnant, well, I'm sorry, you're going to fall.
Yeah.
At some point, you're going to fall.
Reggie's on the phone. Let's get his call in here quick before we go to the break.
Hey, good morning, guys. Jim, Shamey, I'm calling in because I do think I have a relevant question, and I will have the best of both worlds. I'll ask the question, and then I'll hang up and wait for the response. If the Lord tarries and time goes on, you think there'll come a time in America's history that we'll look back on abortion the same way we look back on slavery now, with the same disdain and just kind of like, what were we thinking, that type of stuff? That's just a question that I wonder about quite often and just wonder what you guys thought.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Guys, have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Reggie. The answer is no. Because, and I'll tell you why, Austin can tell you why he says yes. I'll tell you why I say no. Okay, welcome back to the program. Where did you go? You went to college, right?
Twice.
Yeah. Where?
Bible Missionary Institute in the Midwest and then Bob Jones.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask, I was thinking about one of my college fraternity brothers yesterday, and I just called him up to see how he was doing. He and his wife and my wife were really good friends when they were in college, and we stayed in touch with him over the years, and they're both having some serious medical issues, and I just called to see how he's doing, and it just got me thinking about college, you know, going back thinking about my college days. Those were great days. I mean, that's where I met Denise, you know, going to class, being a part of the college life, the way that flows, working in the summers to try to earn money to come back another semester, working over Christmas. I mean, all of that, very happy memories. And Limestone College was not, I mean, it's not some widely hailed academic institution, but it's a great school, and it's got an amazing tradition since 1845. And they're now a university and doing very well, I think, and I'm happy about that because I remember my college days pretty fondly. All right, the question that we were going to answer, Reggie asked the question. He said, will we look back on abortion one day the way we look back on slavery with disdain? And Austin's answer was yes, and my answer is no. And the reason I said no is because I do not have confidence in the direction of society. I don't have confidence in I have more belief in the depravity of humanity and the downward spiral of culture and society leading to the second coming of Jesus. I don't think we're going to get better. I think we're going to get worse till Jesus comes. And when Jesus comes, then he's going to establish, I believe, in a millennial reign. Because I believe there are prophecies in Isaiah that can't be fulfilled unless there's a physical reign of Jesus Christ on this earth for at least 1,000 years. And Revelation speaks about it in not metaphorical or allegorical terms, but very straightforward. I mean, Revelation's not that hard of a book when you think about it. I mean, when it's speaking in it's apocalyptic language, which makes it a little bit more difficult to understand. But it makes clear distinctions between when it's speaking prophetically or metaphorically and when it's speaking about actual events and describing them in a way that may be difficult for us to understand the way we talk today. And I think that's on purpose. I think there were, first of all, I think John was seeing a lot of things on the Isle of Patmos that he had no vocabulary for, so he had to do the best he could. I mean, you know how when we describe something, we say, this is like that? Well, when you're seeing things that no one has ever seen before, including the revelation of the glory of God, what are you going to compare it to? So John's kind of struggling, you know, to come up with descriptive phrases to describe the visions and the things that he's seeing. I think that's part of the problem. But anyway, in answer to Reggie's question, that's why I would say no. I'm not confident at all that we're going to win in the value category. Quite frankly, and some of you are going to be shocked by this, maybe, but my eschatology tells me that the best I can do is hold evil at bay with the power of God in my life and my generation when I've been called to live as a follower of Jesus, to do the best of I can to keep the effects of it from ruining the culture and society that I live in, knowing that when my time is through, then the next generation is going to have a harder time than I did. And that seems to be the thrust of human history, with some very few interludes.
Well said. I am a little bit more optimistic than you are, because I believe that things are getting better while they get worse, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
that there are certain components of culture and I share your, when those things happen, when those good things happen, when things take a turn for the better, morally speaking, I'm surprised.
Right.
Because my expectation is that in a fallen world, on an eschatological calendar that's headed downward, that things are going to get worse. So we share the same baseline expectation of
right.
the world, and yet I've observed things that surprised me, and I'm delighted by those things, and I think it's just, you know, it's always the goodness of God and the common grace of God. And
that's right.
I have a high view of common grace, and so probably my views around abortion and my optimism that it will someday be viewed as the moral evil that it is are rooted in the fact that abortion, historically in America, legal abortion has been viewed or has been what it is because of ignorance of what is actually going on in the womb. And you've talked about this extensively, that as we discover more and more, it becomes
right.
more and more clear to people what that thing actually is. That's a baby. By any definition, that's a baby. And so whether we'll ever get to the point where our culture unequivocally can state that life begins at conception, I don't know that we'll ever get there, but I think that at least at some level, the abortion will be considered as the taking of an innocent life.
Here's why I used to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why I don't feel that way anymore, because we're turning a corner on authoritarianism and totalitarianism. we're not going to be, those of us who believe the way you just described are going to be ground into the to the dirt. Our beliefs are going to be radically suppressed by an authoritarian government. I believe, a very narrow window here to regain the constitutional reins of government, because those reins are being violated on a regular basis with no accountability for anybody. The president of the United States violates the Constitution and says we're going to extend a rent moratorium on people paying rent.
We're going to violate the Constitution just to buy time. We know we're going to lose, but just to buy time.
But the very idea that you would say that, that you as the chief, you know, somebody put your hand on the Bible and swore to protect and defend the Constitution, stands up in front of America and says, this is unconstitutional, but I'm going to do it anyway. And Barack Obama did that with the Dreamers. And Biden
and
has done it again.
Yep.
With DOMA, they just refused. That was a law they didn't agree with. It was a duly authorized law put in place by a duly elected legislature.
We're not going to enforce it.
We're not going to enforce it. Yep. Well, wait a minute. How can you do that? The Justice Department has to defend the law. Nope, we can pick and choose which laws we defend.
So let me tell you again, though, that the thing that... See, I had this really scary epiphany when I was listening to Focus on the Family's production of Father Gilbert, who's an Anglican priest and deals with the paranormal, okay, in their episode, which I recommend to you strongly, called Dead Air. He's interacting with what amounts to basically a demon. And the demon says to him, he says, the reason that you'll lose is because good is constrained by its very nature. It is limited by its goodness. Evil suffers under no such constraints, and so therefore will race ahead. You know, so it's like the dry gulching impulse.
Right.
Good guys don't shoot bad guys in the back, even if they have the opportunity. It's
right.
Would you go back to 1935 and kill Hitler if you had the opportunity to do so?
Okay, this is a great point, because we're going to have to go to a break, but this is a great point for this reason. The people who got behind, let me be careful. Without realizing it, and some realizing it, people who wholeheartedly supported Trump, one of the reasons that you heard was that he was not constrained by a sense of goodness.
Right, right. And so that's why that is exactly right.
Yeah, he
was willing to. Would you please hate my enemies for me?
Because I'm
a Christian.
And you're putting voice to my hatred, and you're whopping these people up the side of the head.
Hit him again.
That I want to whop up side of the head.
but I can't because I'm a Christian.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, so in that world, and that's what I was concerned about, was because I was like, oh no, that's right. Evil doesn't have constraints, and so it can win. But the blind spot there is that this is God's world.
Well,
and God is on the side
lost.
Of good,
right?
You know, and so God's not just going to let evil. And so it's like in the Lord of the Rings. You know, it just seems like good is so overwhelmingly outnumbered and outgunned, and it's just like they're going to lose. Sauron is too powerful, and the weight of culture, the arc of history, is against them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you see somebody show up. The trees show up at the Battle of Helm's Deep, and you're like, never saw the trees coming.
And who is the hero? We thought it would be Aragorn. It turns out to be the hobbits,
right?
Which is everybody
That's
bows
what
down
God
to.
Does.
In the end.
That's what God does. Is he takes a David and he defeats a Goliath, and you're like, how did that happen?
Today is Constitution Day, by the way, and we're going to get into that in the next hour. Just to let you know, we haven't forgotten it. Johannes is a first time caller. Thanks for calling the show.
I'm not optimistic like Austin is, because I'm just reminded in my spirit where it says, in the days of Noah. I don't think we're headed in a way that is optimistic at all when it comes to abortion. I think it's Ireland is moving toward abortion, like you were talking about. Mexico is beginning to move in that direction. I think it's a fallen world. And as it was in the days of Noah, so it shall be.
Yeah, I think Jesus spoke about that, talking about the end times. The day in the days of Noah, people were eating and drinking and going about their business when the calamity fell upon them. Now, some would say that has to do with the unexpected nature that people find themselves surprised when judgment really does come. But at the same time, I think there is an element that Jesus did use the days of Noah as an example of the final days. And when you think about the days of Noah, the Bible says that God looked all over the earth and couldn't find any, the thoughts of men were evil continually. The one man that God preserved and found was Noah, who found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And notice, Noah was not chosen because he was perfect, but because God decided to bestow upon him grace as the one whose he and his family would preserve the human race. But
so, all right,
anyway, thank you.
Tony, I can take us all the way up to the top of the hour responding
sure.
to Johannes' good points.
Okay.
And here's what I hear him saying, and I definitely believe this, okay, is that people follow their heart, and their heart is broken.
Yeah.
Okay, but I also know that God is near to the brokenhearted.
Yes.
And so these are the rules of the world. And again, I say that hope is a prime Christian virtue. And what I'm saying by hope is a prime Christian virtue is I'm saying that optimism in the heart and life of a Christian is actually good for the world.
It is good for the world.
So you will be more motivated to take Christian action and to think Christianly if you do that with hope. Because if you do that with despair or even pessimism, cultural pessimism, it's going to demotivate you and it's going to demoralize you, and you're going to be less essentially motivated to cultural engagement, which is what we're asking people to do.
I disagree.
Okay, because, tell me about your disagreement.
Well, it depends on where your hope is based.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, if Christians should have hope. But our hope is not rooted in the fact that the culture or the society is going to get better. Our hope is rooted in the fact that this world is going to pass away, and the world that we inherit is going to be one that is free from all the things that we deal with in this world. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you put your hope as an optimistic Christian into the betterment of the culture and society, and you don't see it, that's going to undermine your hope.
You're going to be more disappointed. Yeah.
Because you think your expectation is, oh, we're winning this. I see this all the time with Christians. They're like, we'll win a court case. And it's like, whew, okay, now we can get back to normal because things are going to work. No, if your hope is in the court or in political discourse or who the next person that's going to be president is, you're going to lose that hope pretty quick.
So let me give you one more.
Okay.
The pessimism of Christianity is a uniquely, right now in today's moment, is a uniquely Western feature. It's a feature of Western society because the Christianity in the West is on the decline.
That's right.
But Christianity elsewhere around the world is expanding and exploding even.
But
in the Muslim world, in Africa, the church in China is vibrant and orthodox.
You know why? Because in the rest of the world, is not as tied to the material world
That's
or the
it.
Blessings of prosperity that we are. And so they're unleashed to invest their hope and something that transcends
the
world.
That's exactly
right.
That is exactly it. So while your point is a good one and it stands, is that, you know, our hope is not in a political outcome. And if you know me at all, you know that my hope is not in politics.
I know that.
You know, but I have a smile on my face because there's joy in my heart as I soldier through
yes.
a world where I'm not at home.
Yes.
I feel very much ill at ease here.
Yes.
And yet I know that ultimately Christ is on the throne and he
there
will
you go.
Reign on this earth.
Yeah.
He will reign on this earth for 1,000 years. What will it be like to be in a world that is reigned by a perfect king?
The lion will lie down with the lamb, and the innocent child will play at the den of the poisonous snake, and will have no fear. That's the kind of world we're going to live in.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. That's a great way. So that's how these two views, the yes and the no, actually come together.
Yeah.
They come together around where we place our hope.
We both know that things are going to get worse before they get better.
Right.
But I know they're going to get better. And so that's what keeps me going.
That's good. I like it. All right. We've got the break coming up for news. We'll come back and talk about another important document, the Constitution.